We will go ahead and call this special meeting of the Board of Regents to order. Could we please get a roll call?
Regent Carter?
Present.
Regent Carvalho?
Here.
Regent Del Carlo?
Here.
Vice Chair Dubrava?
Here.
Chair Geddes?
Here.
Regent Hayes?
Here.
Regent Lieberman?
Good morning.
Regent McAdoo?
Here.
Regent McMichael?
Here.
Regent Moran?
Here.
Regent Page?
Here.
Regent Perkins?
Here.
I think I heard her say here, yes. Regent Trachuk?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Could we please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance led by Regent Carvalho?
Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Somebody's series joining the pledge. For those, we do have four regents who are calling in. If you're not speaking, if you could mute your phone, that would be helpful for the sound quality for all of us. But feel free to unmute when you want to speak. We will now go to item number one, public comment. Dean Gould.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Public comment will be taken during this agenda item. No action may be taken on a matter raised under this item until the matter is included on an agenda as an item on which action may be taken. Comments will be limited to 2 minutes per person. Persons making comment will be asked to begin by stating their name for the record and to spell their last name. The board chair may elect to allow additional public comment on a specific agenda item when that agenda item is being considered. In accordance with Attorney General Opinion Number 00-047, as restated in the Attorney General's Open Meeting Law Manual, the board chair may prohibit comment if the content of that comment is a topic that is not relevant to or within the authority of the Board of Regents, or if the content is willfully disruptive of the meeting by being irrelevant, repetitious, slanderous, offensive, inflammatory, irrational, or amounting to personal attacks or interfering with the rights of other speakers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do we have public comment? If you could approach the podium, state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman.
There we go. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, Chancellor, members of the board. My name is Warren Hardy, last name spelled H-A-R-D-Y. I'm here to speak in favor of item number four and to thank those who were involved in the process of getting to this, what I will call, historic day. I was not quite born and raised in Southern Nevada, but I've been here since 71. I'm a graduate of the Clark County School District and UNLV. And this is a day that people like me have looked forward to for a long time. We're pretty serious in Southern Nevada and in Nevada about taking care of our visitors and our tourists, because that's the thing that drives our economy and helps provide us all with jobs. I can't think in the almost 40 years I've lived in Southern Nevada of a bigger issue or a bigger thing that we've done for the residents of Southern Nevada than what item four represents today. And I want to thank the Chancellor, I want to thank the Board of Regents, I want to thank all of those who have been instrumental in this. And I'd be remiss if I didn't call out the efforts of your counsel, Joe Reynolds, who was absolute, I'm going to call him a warrior on this in terms of putting it together at your direction and putting this agreement together. I also want to recognize the donors. This is a much bigger issue in my mind than just a medical school at UNLV. In one swoop here today, we have the opportunity not only to provide first-class quality medical education in Southern Nevada, but to change the culture of philanthropy in the state. When the governor announced this, he spoke at length about what this does to change the culture of philanthropy in this state. What this represents is a roadmap going forward for philanthropic endeavors in Southern Nevada. So I want to thank the donors who were tireless in this and frankly refused to give up and kept pushing forward, because they've made this day possible, as well as your effort and support. So thank you for that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Next.
My name is Robert Manis, M-A-N-I-S, and I'm representing the College of Southern Nevada and the Nevada Faculty Alliance. And on behalf of them, most of whom cannot come today because this is the busiest day of classes, I want to definitely agree with the proposal on the medical school. We need a medical school. We also need, as you know, quality education for the masses of Clark County students. As you know, the Fact Finder met last summer on the topic of CSN salaries, and the CSN administration spent 3.5 hours detailing every expenditure that they make. We presented the Department of Education numbers and the fact that the Truckee Meadows faculty make 5% more for tenured faculty than we do. This data we submitted at the community college session a few weeks ago. The fact finder said no matter what numbers we use, CSN can afford a 5% raise. Now CSN wants it to add a clawback on a far smaller raise, even though, as the fact finder said, they do have the money. I'm going to apologize, but I think CSN negotiators are being squirrely. We were asked to take back the arbitration in exchange for a raise in base salary, and now they want the ability to take that back, too, if their numbers don't add up. Please, as the Regents, I request you, appreciating your help and your service, to tell them to get real. We need to solve this. Otherwise, we'll be here every meeting from now until eternity. Thank you very much, and I appreciate your service again.
Thank you. Next.
Hello, my name is Stacy Walters. I'm faculty at CSN and vice president of CSN's NFA chapter. Hello again. I'm here today to provide an update to CSN NFA bargaining negotiations. We're meeting every Friday until the contract is settled. However, salary negotiation is slow. The third party fact finder compromised and originally put forth an 8% salary increase, with the first 3% satisfied by this past year's 3% COLA increase. COLA is not a raise, it's a right. We've been negotiating for the remaining 5%. CSN recently proposed 1.25% raise with a list of insulting contingencies. Our fact-finding audits informed the recommendation of 5% going forward, and CSN has money to cover the expense of a long overdue raise. Anything contrary to this is a lie. This process has been slowed by CSN's contingencies. Faculty have needed to be compensated for years, cutting our step system, recession-proofing salaries, and pushing furloughs have all contributed to salary loss. Compression has exacerbated the problem. Over the past few years, enrollment has continually increased at CSN, and CSN has prioritized funding equipment, labs, and buildings over the caretakers of education, the faculty. We need a clean raise. After 2 months of discussing a possible 2% raise and bonus for the first year of contracts, CSN offered the 1.25%, no bonus, and options to increase an already overbearing workload in order to pay for it. The reputation of INSHE is on the line. The word of INSHE regulators and CSN administrators is on the line. It is no secret that CSN administrators desperately need a win. Without a clean and fair contract, including a reasonable living wage, the climate at CSN will worsen, the evaluation of CSN administration will be affected, and the lack of confidence of faculty and their administrators will deepen. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment here in Las Vegas? Seeing none, is there any public comment in Elko?
No public comment in Elko at this time.
Is there any public comment in Reno? Looked like no public comment.
No public comment in Reno.
Thank you. We will now close public comment, go to item number 2, consent items. Do I have a motion for approval of the consent agenda? Motion from Regent Del Carlo, second from Regent McAdoo. Any questions or comments on the consent agenda? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Item number three, Campus Master Plan 2020, UNLV, President Miana.
Good morning, Chancellor, Regents. Today, what we're doing here is presenting an information-only update on UNLV's campus master plan efforts. The board approved a resource allocation for this effort in 2018. And the campus master plan update, the work began in the summer of last year. Phase one, which establishes the planning framework, has recently completed, and we'd like to ensure that the board is informed of our direction and is able to provide input as we move into the more detailed planning phases. Today, what we're going to do is briefly highlight the project structure, the phase one planning framework, which includes the master plan basis and objectives, the phase two Maryland campus master plan, which is already underway, and a very brief specific property update to include information on Sam Boyd and the 42-acre site. So it has been between 7 and 13 years since major campus master plan updates were presented to the board on different aspects of the master plan. So specifically, the most recent comprehensive master plan for the Maryland campus was completed in 2012. Limited updates were presented in 2015, as you will recall, to include the acquisition of the 42-acre site at Tropicana and Koval, and with separate options for a stadium site and a campus village. A more recent update in 2017 presented more information on the campus village option per the board's request. And the most recent updates for the Shadow Lane campus and North campus were approved in 2009 and 2006, respectively. Now, much has changed since the most recent comprehensive master plans. There have been updates to ENSHI and institutional strategic goals. We've attained Carnegie One, the continued growth and diversity of UNLV student body, as well as program and other changes, including the launch of the UNLV Medical School of Medicine. We are now working on a multi-year financial plan model, and investments in campus infrastructure are obviously a significant financial component of the plan. So updating this campus master plan is going to help us prioritize campus capital needs and to plan for how we will fund these capital projects. The primary scope of this update effort is the Maryland Paradise Campus, for which the master plan is currently midway through development. We will also be looking at the Shadow Lane Campus, for which the master plan will start in phase three of the update, and we'll show you the timeline of these project phases in just a moment. With limited scope focus, we will be looking at the North Campus, which still is on the list to be approved for funding to be remediated before that land is conveyed. And we will look at the Harry Reid Research and Technology Park, which is being developed by a private master developer via the UNLV Research Foundation. The Sam Boyd Stadium and the 42-acre sites are not addressed in this planning effort, but I will be presenting more information about these properties just to keep you up to date of our thinking about them at the end of the presentation. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask David Frommer, our Associate Vice President of Planning, Construction, and Real Estate, to come up and walk you through the Phase 1 and Phase 2 progress, and then I'll return to the podium to discuss those two specific properties a little later on. David?
Thank you. Thank you, President Miana. Good morning, Chair Geddes, Chancellor Riley, members of the board. For the record, David Frommer, Associate Vice President, UNLV Planning, Construction, and Real Estate. So to continue on with the presentation, the master plan project is supported by university leadership and is being managed through the UNLV Planning Construction Office. This slide talks a little bit about the project structure and the level of input we're getting, which is extensive in terms of getting input from campus stakeholders, students, faculty, staff, community stakeholders, and a variety of partner entities in terms of our partner public entities and focus groups on campus and the different scope areas we're looking at in the master plan. So a very comprehensive effort. We have engaged a firm through a public solicitation, Sasaki Associates, a very prominent firm in master planning. They are helping us lead the charge on this effort. So here you see a map, a scope of a map of the scope of each phase. We are in the phase two piece right now. Phase one was focused on the kind of building the framework, the background information, and now we're in the heart of campus master planning for the Maryland campus. This is going to continue through 2020, and then we'll get into the future phases of our Shadow Lane campus and then some detailed planning components. Everything we do is driven by the NSHE strategic goals and the top-tier goals that drives everything we do in this master plan. Whoops, I went backwards. In terms of the phase one planning framework, a lot of this was feedback from our stakeholders and constituents. So certainly these are important things consistent with NSHE strategic goals and UNLV top-tier goals, including enhancing connectivity and institutional identity, an unparalleled student experience, preeminence in health sciences, advancing our research, growth, and partnership, community engagement, and promoting stewardship, all key components of our master plan and what we need to achieve. Some items we got based on data review in terms of things that are driving the master plan as well, maybe more on the practical side, are optimizing academic and office space, expanding student life space, increasing our on-campus housing, improving access to our event centers, increasing research space, and building a strong health sciences campus. These are all items that when we start putting the bones on the master plan in phase two, are going to drive some of the things we're thinking about, and we've made these are things that have been on our mind for some time. Some more items on the planning framework in terms of qualitative. A lot of this was feedback from our students in particular, is promoting a strong university identity, defining the campus edges better, strengthening our campus core where folks congregate, enhancing our pedestrian experience, and expanding our multimodal transit and transportation options to get people to and from campus. Some of those things are very important, campus edges and gateways, some room for improvement there, which will be part of the master plan. So the planning framework, we have a great organization of our campus at UNLV, and we want to expand that and build upon it. We have neighborhoods on campus that are probably could be better defined in terms of campus functions and activities, building strong gateways on campus so when you enter the campus, whether it's a pedestrian or a vehicle entry or transit, you know you're coming to UNLV, which isn't fully defined at all areas. Strengthening our campus heart, we have this beautiful LEED library, open space around it. That's a real opportunity. Reinforce, extend the spine. That's a bit of planner speak, so to speak. But we have a very strong central walkway on campus that isn't fully realized. Emphasizing connections and views. If you see on campus, the view of the mountains, view of the strip, just wonderful. And then extending desert garden landscape. We have wonderful landscape on campus. We want to extend that and put that throughout the entire experience. So here's a little blow up of progress in phase two, where we're starting to really get into the Maryland campus of a campus core neighborhood. And what you can see here is LEED Library in the center. The idea, these are all very early and conceptual, so we're still working through these, of having a kind of a core quad open space right near our library that's surrounded by campus facilities, some of them existing, some of them new, enhancing it with landscape, having a space where students can really congregate and feel like they're in the center of campus. So this is one example of one neighborhood we're looking at. There are several other neighborhoods we're looking at as well. Wayfinding and signage and branding is a big part of what we do. It's an area that probably isn't as consistent as what we'd like over the 60-plus years of UNLV. We're looking at standardizing that and having more of a consistent branding approach to UNLV and our signage, from having a family of signs that all relate and interconnect so that there's consistency, and also looking at options, and we've been actively working with partners on this, to extend some branding to the edge, such as the perimeter banners, where we have more of a presence in the community and people really see you're at UNLV, which I think is not fully consistent quite yet. So we're hoping to see some progress there, and we are implementing some of these things through pilot programs and working with some of those partner entities, so we expect to see some updates in the field, in the student and campus experience in 2020. A little bit about pathway systems. Campuses all suffer from this issue where service vehicles and cars and pedestrians and golf carts and bikes and scooters and every form of transportation that exists has conflicts. We're looking at how do we deal with these pathway systems to make them as clear and coherent as possible and make the experience as pleasant and inviting and as effective as possible. So just a diagram there of how we're looking at different pathway systems on campus. And then landscape, very important, sometimes get overlooked, but we have some beautiful landscaping on campus. A lot of campuses are defined by their beautiful landscape. That's something that we want to extend throughout the campus and really capitalize upon and give that experience of a great campus throughout as opposed to select areas. So a major part of the master planning effort. And then a little bit about capital priorities. Again, all of this is a work in progress, but what we're looking at in terms of near-term two different kind of designations of near-term planning versus in progress versus thinking about planning and then long-term. So that'll be part of our capital plan and some of the things that we bring before you related to capital requests. But we are actively thinking about how do we execute this and how do we deal with the resources that are needed and the plan. So this is an overview slide, again, a progress shot of where we're looking at the master plan. We will have more campus outreach to get input of our students, faculty, and stakeholders, but wanted to give you a progress view of how things are starting to look in terms of the data we've collected and some of the planning concepts that are coming forth. So with that, I'm going to turn it back to President Miana to go over a few slides on the property items.
So there are a couple of properties that are out of the scope of this master planning effort, but we did want you to know how we're thinking about these properties going forward. So for Sam Boyd Stadium, UNLV is in the process of determining the appropriate next steps for the property. The property is just over 69 acres, and we're considering any number of options at the moment, considering the feasibility or hold or sell options, with a long-term lease being the least likely option. So if UNLV were to sell this property, our current research indicates that a more likely private use of the property would be future single-family development, with the buyer most likely being a residential developer. However, we want to keep our options open at this point, to really evaluate what would support UNLV best. And we're also taking into consideration the UNLV Athletics Business and Operations Plan, including event type needs and space requirements that may not be met at Allegiant Stadium. So in essence, I guess what I'm saying to you is we're exploring all of our options. We don't have specific ones to report to you now, but we're thinking about this as comprehensively as we can. And the other property I wanted to talk about is the 42-acre site at Tropicana and Koval. The development of this site, candidly, is not imminent due to the fact that we have a focus on high-priority development projects on the main campus. So if you think about it, we have the engineering building, which is about to start. We're planning for a science and technology building, the Lee Business School building, a fine arts building, among other capital priorities. So the bottom line is that for the foreseeable future, UNLV is focused on these other high-priority capital projects, and we are unlikely to be developing on that site anytime soon. So what we would like at this point is to investigate the potential for this land to generate some revenue until we are ready to develop it. So we're planning on issuing an RFP for a ground lease. Our preferred land use option is to ground lease the entire property to one party, although we are open to multiple parties. A minimum ground lease base rent and lease term would need to be set by UNLV. Selection would be based, obviously, on the most responsive or responsible proposal and the one that's deemed most advantageous to UNLV. So we anticipate the RFP will be issued in February and responses will be due 2 months after issuance. If UNLV, of course, were to pursue executing a ground lease for this property, we would return to the Board of Regents with an agenda item for this purpose in accordance, obviously, with board policy for lease and property. So we want to see what kind of interest there is for a ground lease on the 42 acres. That's where we're at.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments from the board? Regent Hayes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back on, talking about the 42 acres, but back on page 2 of your presentation, I'm looking and there's land to the east of the 42 acres that you show having, looks like some grassy areas and a parking lot. Is that land that UNLV owns?
I'm not sure what you're referring
okay.
to. Do you know which one?
Region Hayes, that was page 2 of the
page
slide.
Page 2 of your slide, yeah. Okay. It's right next to the RPZ, the runway protection zone. There's grassy areas and parking, it looks like.
Yes, for the record, David Frommer with UNLV. I believe you're referring to a site where there's two play fields showing. I'll try to back up to that slide so that we can refer to it for...
It's tough to tell in here. I mean, it looks green like grass, but...
Yes, so if I'm highlighting the site correctly, this was in our 2012 master plan that was approved. Actually, this is the 2017 diagram. Just west of University Center Drive, formerly Swenson, that site at Tropicana and University Center Drive.
No, not the one that's right on Trop. It's further back. You can see where it says landscape improvement in like a
gotcha.
Dotted area and above that.
Yes.
Is that something that UNLV owns currently?
It is not. And to give a little context, Regent Hayes, to your question, back in 2012, and this kind of carried through in our 2015 and 17 updates, we were talking about the idea of the land north of that kind of trapezoidal area you're referring to as a potential site for some UNLV athletic or intramural fields and some parking. That is a site owned by Clark County and managed by the Department of Aviation. There are major flood control issues in this area, and at this time, my understanding is Clark County is looking at putting a flood detention facility there, so we are not currently looking at that as something that UNLV would look to purchase or lease because the county has other plans for infrastructure for the benefit of everybody.
So should we take that off the map then?
We will in the update. We're showing what was approved in 17. It will not be showing on this update.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Regent Page.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. In regards to Sam Boyd, is that red line, does UNLV, do we own all of that? And what does the county own? I know they own some of the property out there.
Yes, for the record, David Frommer, Regent Page, we do own the property indicated within that red line, a little over 69 acres. The land around it to the south and to the east is Clark County owned land. We have cooperative agreements where we use that for parking when UNLV football games are held there. And then those two baseball, softball fields you see to the right, pardon me, are part of Clark County land, the Silver Bowl Park. So we only own the land within the red perimeter. The rest is owned by Clark County or to the north, I believe, the slide's kind of turned, is private single-family development.
Okay, thanks. And then a question on the 42 acres. Have we got an appraisal recently?
Let me just answer that. So the appraisals are contingent on the use of the land. So we would, when we get more specific about the use of that land, we would come to the board with those figures.
Okay. So then I'm assuming we did not get one just as raw land versus like when we purchased it.
We have appraisals for certain uses of the land that we haven't decided we're going to go with.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? All right. Thank you very much. We will now move on to item number 4, the medical education building project at UNLV. I just want to make sure the board knows the items that we are considering today are items 1 through 5, as listed in the agenda item. The supplemental materials were sent out to the board for their full knowledge of things that were referenced within the documents before us today, such as the MEB plans and specs, which we're handing over. If this was approved, we'd hand those over, but there's no binding agreement that they follow those, but we want to make sure that we hand off all the work that has been done to date. if this is approved. So really it's the items 1 through 5 that are being considered here today. And Chief Counsel, General Counsel Reynolds, will you get us started?
Mr. Geddes.
And Regent Hayes, while he's hitting the podium.
Thank you very much, Chair Geddes. I will be, at the advice of counsel, recusing myself on participating in this matter. I own commercial land in the medical district and have consistently recused myself on all property-related matters, whether leasing or purchasing or building in the medical district due to the potential conflict of the commercial land I own in the immediate vicinity. So I will be recusing myself. Thank you.
Just 1 second, Joe. Dean Gould, please.
Chair Geddes.
Oh, someone's calling in. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to remind the regents before we start this agenda item that we do not have any signed open meeting law waivers from anybody. So I would just like to remind you to be very cautious as we move into this matter under NRS 241.033. Not to discuss any individual and his or her character or anything like that, because I'll have to stop you to avoid an open meeting law violation. And I'm not saying that you would do that, but it's something that I feel an obligation as your counsel to point out to you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And just 1 second, Joe. Was there a comment on the phone?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I need you to give me my disclosure.
Oh, thank you. Regent Carter.
I was previously a student in the gaming innovation course at UNLV where I developed a casino game. If the game is marketed and sold, I will be required to pay UNLV in the form of shared royalties. Pursuant to a standard contract that all students in the course were required to sign, I will receive no remuneration from UNLV. I disclose this relationship under NRS Chapter 281A as recommended by the Nevada Commission on Ethics. This item does not affect my interests, so I will be voting. Thank you.
Thank you. General Counsel Reynolds.
Good morning, Board. Joe Reynolds for the record. This morning I'm going to present an overview of what we refer to as the UNLV Medical Education Building, or MEB, project and the agreements, the terms, and the relationships that we've developed over the past 3 months, which often referred to as the donor group and the 501c3 nonprofit corp, the Nevada Health Bioscience Asset Corporation, that we often refer to as the NHBAC. After I do some of my presentation, I will turn to UNLV President Miana and Chancellor Riley for additional remarks. So that the board is aware, we have our entire legal team here this morning, and would just like to acknowledge Mike Wixom from Smith, Larson, and Wixom. We have Mandy Shavinsky and Michael Alaris from Snell Wilmer, as well as Elda Sadu and James Martinez, who've all worked on these agreements before the board, and also just like to let the board know we also have David Fromer and Gene Vock and Russell Rowe, who have also provided much assistance. I'd also like to introduce to the board James Wadups from the law firm Fabian Cott, who flew in this morning. He represents the donor group and the NHBAC, worked tirelessly with him over the past months, and also David Lyon from the firm, who's not with us today. He's out of the country. We've worked on developing these materials for the board and just experienced a lot of professionalism, cooperation, and transparency. And we're all here to answer any questions that the board may have on the agenda item today. Mr. Chairman, as you mentioned this morning, there's 5 legal documents that are agendized item for the board's specific approval. And would also request of the board, as is described in the agenda item, also for the board to approve authority for UNLV and working through NCHI to effectuate the entire project and agreement terms that will be in front of the board today, including subsequent work with the Clark County Commission, as well as drafting a letter of support for the NHBAC regarding tax purposes. And with that, we'll jump into a broad overview of some of the core terms of the agreement here this morning. And again, we'll answer any questions that the board may have. under the agreement, and we agreed to these terms amongst at least the legal counsel in around the first week of November to kind of guide this process, and we've stuck to these terms throughout this process. And the first is that the donor group will have full and sole authority to select and determine the members, the directors of their not-profit corporation, the NHBAC. It's a distinct legal entity, independent from the Board of Regents. The NHBAC will be responsible for the private financing and overseeing the construction of the medical education building. You know, subject to subsequent approval by the Clark County Commission, to remove the current deed restrictions on the parcel that the commission conveyed to the Board of Regents to construct the medical education building. They've agreed to also cooperate with us in achieving that. There's covenants, conditions, and restrictions, commonly referred to as CC&Rs, that will be recorded against the MAB parcel, and essentially to guarantee that this is going to be used for medical education building, medical related services on that project, and that will run with the land. UNLV, Mr. Chairman, as you mentioned, will transfer the current design plans and specifications to the donor group to use as a template and a guide as they move forward with this project. The NHBAC may further modify and amend some of those development and design plans, but we'll do so under the review of UNLV, consultation and cooperation with UNLV as they move forward. The NHBAC will construct the building in compliance with all applicable federal laws, state laws, codes. They've agreed to pay prevailing wage for the project. They will commence construction by February 1st, 2021, so almost a year to the day from today. If construction is not commenced, the land and whatever is built on it will revert back to the Board of Regents. The building will be completed by February 1st of 2025, so a five-year time frame. Upon completion and an issuance of certificates of occupancy by the governing authorities, UNLV will lease the building from the donor group and the NHBAC for $1 a year for a five-year period. During that lease term, UNLV will be responsible for applicable taxes, providing security, insurance, and will also establish a reserve fund to help and ensure that maintenance of the property occurs. During the lease term, the NHBAC will have no authority over the curriculum, administration, faculty, students, or policies of the medical school, but they will retain rights of a landlord, consistent with a traditional landlord-tenant relationship. On February 1st, 2030, the parcel of the land, as well as the building and all fixtures, will be conveyed back to the Board of Regents in the UNLV. The board and the donor group have agreed to mutually agree upon the naming of the building and any rooms and halls associated with that. So at some point in the future, that naming matter will come back to the board for subsequent approval. And throughout the construction process, UNLV is going to be in the position of helping and assisting however the donor group may need to make sure this is a success. And INCHI as well will be in that position. And so if there's any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them for the board.
Thank you. We'll go to President Miana.
There we go. Sorry about that. Marta Miana for the record. UNLV strongly supports this project as it has the potential to be a transformative development for our medical school, for our university, our county and city, and our state. Our current facilities can only accommodate entering classes of 60 students, and the learning spaces are very modest and do not lend themselves to developments in future medical education delivery. If we are to become a state-of-the-art medical school that innovates and changes the healthcare landscape in Southern Nevada, we need facilities to make that goal a reality. We need to at least double the size of entering classes, and we need to provide these students with a world-class and forward-looking experience in their medical education. What we have before us today is a once-in-a-generation opportunity, thanks to the remarkable generosity of a group of community members who have been strongly invested in this medical school since its inception and in UNLV for decades. Although the proposal before you is novel, insofar as anything the board has approved previously, it is also a potential gift the likes of which we have never seen before. Much care, and I've been a witness to this on a daily basis, much care was taken into the preparation of the documents before you. They were worked on collaboratively and meticulously by a dedicated group of people from ENSHE, UNLV, and the donor group. I want to thank ENSHE General Counsel Joe Reynolds, UNLV General Counsel Elda Sidhu, and Mike Wixom for their combination of openness and diligence throughout the process. Governor Sisolak was instrumental in facilitating this proposal, and we thank him for his commitment to the project and to this community. We also appreciate the support of the Speaker of the Nevada State Assembly, Jason Frierson, Senate Majority Leader Nicole Cannizzaro, and Clark County Commission Chairwoman Marilyn Kirkpatrick. And finally, of course, we thank the donors who are willing to so impressively invest in our shared vision of a UNLV School of Medicine that will forever change healthcare in Southern Nevada. Thank you.
Thank you. Chancellor Riley.
Thank you, Chair Geddes and members of the board. I, too, want to extend all the thank yous that Dr. Miena, President Miena, has outlined and appreciate everybody who was involved in bringing this to fruition today. And I, too, will join in strongly recommend to the Board of Regents that they approve the development agreement for the new UNLV Medical Education Building. The Nevada System of Education welcomes the private support to construct this new medical building. We're in desperate need to fill the shortage of physicians in Southern Nevada. Once this building is constructed, the UNLV School of Medicine will be able to triple in size, which will increase the number of doctors, and most importantly, specialists who live and work in the Silver State. Thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chair DeBrava, and then Regent Trachok.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. Well, this is a long time coming, and I think it's a really positive move, and I'm excited and enthused about the potential, like President Miena had mentioned. I also want to take a moment and extend some thank yous, Chancellor Riley, President Miena, for your leadership and listening to the proposals and the back and forth, and it certainly was a push-pull, and I think we've ended up with a very good product here as far as the transaction, and I have to give the thank yous to the attorneys on both sides with the donor group and with ENSHE and UNLV. I think they did a phenomenal job of creating something that the donor group can be comfortable with and that the Board of Regents, I think, is comfortable with. I'd like to hear questions from my other colleagues here on the board, but I think this is something that's going to be a win-win. And the community is going to benefit, and UNLV is going to benefit. So it's really exciting, and I also want to extend a thank you to the donors for their willingness to make this type of a commitment to the community that they live in. And with that being said, I would make a motion to approve this agenda item.
Second.
I have a motion from Regent DeBrava, second from Regent Lieberman, Regent Trachok, then Regent Lieberman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have several questions and then some brief comments. My questions are to our attorneys, Mike Wixom and Joe Reynolds. The first question I have is, could one of the two of you please describe the reversionary interest in favor of the county on this particular parcel in question.
Yes, thank you, Regent Trey Chalk. The current deed restrictions in the reversionary interests in the parcel and the deed conveyed by Clark County is there's a few of those. One is that the property be used for medical school and for health-related programs. That construction shall commence before July 1st, 2021. And that there's a diligent pursuit of completion, that a minimum of $20 million will be used for the medical building.
So if the construction isn't commenced by July 21st of next year, then the property automatically reverts back to Clark County?
Currently, yes, Regent Trachok, but we are working with the Clark County Commission, and this entire proposal is contingent upon the Clark County Commission giving subsequent approval. With Russell Rowe, we are in communication with the Clark County Commission to remove those current deed restrictions with respect to both the July 1st, 2021 deadline, and also to have their approval with this. They donated this land and conveyed it to the Board of Regents, and we believe it's only proper to make sure that they give their approval to this transaction.
If the donor group fails to raise the funds by February 2021, does the property then automatically revert back to UNLV?
Yes, it does. But I would add, Regent Trachok, it's not specifically tied to the funding. That trigger is tied to the commencement of construction as opposed to the fundraising. The way this agreement is structured, that the donor group is responsible for the finance and funding. We don't have a specific benchmark in the development agreement regarding funding targets.
So if the construction starts by February 1st, 2021, but all of the funds haven't been raised, the property still stays with the donor group. Is my understanding correct?
Yes, it is.
And what are the provisions in the agreement that will protect the university in the event that this property somehow gets tied up in protracted litigation?
No one
between the
sure you know no one can always predict the future. There's always litigation possibilities in any real estate transaction. You know, both parties in the board retain all legal rights and remedies under Nevada law to pursue that as necessary, but we don't believe that will be necessary. As I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the presentation, our collaboration, our work with Mr. Hardy and the attorneys has been a really positive, and we worked hard to make sure that it was to set this entire project on the right track.
I understand that, but as lawyers, we always have to be planning for the worst-case scenario. Now, as I understand it, it's not a question of whether or not the funds are raised by February of 2021. It's whether or not the construction has commenced. And if the construction isn't commenced by February 1st, 2021, how long will it take for UNLV to issue the bonds and raise the funds to proceed with the construction of the project as the board envisioned it when it approved in July of 2019 the UNLV request to issue the bonds?
We estimate anywhere from 3 to 6 months.
And if the construction doesn't start by February 1st, 2021, how long will it take the university to finalize the construction documents and to let a construction contract or to contract with a contractor to start the project?
We estimate anywhere from 18 to 22 months.
So if the construction doesn't start by February 1st of 2021. We're looking at January or February of 2023 when UNLV would be able to start this project.
Based on current estimates, yes, Regent Trashok.
What is the cost differential in the donor plan project and the university's plan project?
Currently, we don't specifically know. You know, the donor group is working on raising those funds and the financing. Publicly, we've heard somewhere around over $150 million, but I currently don't have the answer for that.
And what's the university's planned project cost? The one that we reviewed and approved 6 months ago.
I believe in thank you, President Miana, $125
million. $125 million. So what provisions do we have in this agreement if construction commences, but all of the funding to complete the project has not been yet raised? Is there any contingency or any provisions in the agreement that address this possibility?
Not specifically, but there certainly are provisions in this agreement and benchmarks throughout the process, even ones that trigger throughout the coming year for us to be in communication with the NHBAC regarding those developments. There's also a requirement in the development agreement that a contractor be secured. And, you know, through our experience and as well as a consultation with Mr. Wixom, we don't believe that the proper contractor will be in place unless those funds, or at least adequate funds, are in place for that to commence.
But it's possible to have a contractor sign up without the entire $155-plus million sitting in an escrow account or a construction account?
You know, I might not be fully qualified to answer that, but we believe so. But the way this is structured is that will be something for the NHBAC to work on.
So let's just assume, for the sake of this discussion, because I think it's important for the record, let's say that the contract is signed by a contractor, all of the funds aren't raised. Midway through the construction project, the construction stops, and there are not sufficient funds to finish the project. Does the project then automatically revert back to UNLV?
After the construction deadline is met, is that, if I'm understanding the question correctly?
The construction has started. Okay. It's halfway completed. There's a dispute. The contractor, we've seen this situation before. The contractor stops work. And my question is, then, does that property automatically revert back to UNLV?
Not automatically. There is the provision in the development agreement that a conditional certificate of occupancy is required to be issued by February 1st, 2024, prior to the 2025 completion date. But as I mentioned earlier, all contract remedies under Nevada law are still available to the Board of Regents to address that concern. If that materializes, we'd certainly be in communication with the NHBAC on that.
And if eventually the UNLV takes control of the project, then we're stuck with the construction design from the donor group, and we're stuck with the building that's completed to the point of, in my hypothetical, in the termination of the actual work on the project. My question is, have we thought about, or what does the university do when it has its own plans? Is it then forced to complete the project as envisioned by the donors, or is it possible for the university then to go back and complete the project as it originally envisioned?
It's certainly possible under this agreement if that scenario materializes, and I believe you're getting at if for whatever circumstance, the board has a half-completed building on this property that's ultimately turned back to the board. The board will still be able to then modify and complete the construction, but I would add that the Board of Regents and the state and UNLV still have the value and the added benefit of all the work that has already been put in to the building. And I'd just also like to add for the record, Mr. Hardy came up and mentioned to me that the NHBAC has no intention whatsoever for commencing construction until the adequate funding is in place.
Got it. Again, as lawyers, we always have to look and plan for as many contingencies as are foreseeable. It is not unforeseeable that a project would be stopped midstream. We've already had experience with that. Now, what about the possibility of outstanding mechanics liens on the project? What protections do we have in the agreement to protect the university from mechanics liens?
As I mentioned earlier, we still have all remedies available under Nevada law. We'd have monetary remedies, judicial remedies available. From a practical perspective, outstanding mechanics liens, existing at the time of a reversion will be something, navigated by UNLV and the Board of Regents in that matter.
So we have the all of our legal rights to litigate. My question is, in this situation, we're deeding over the property to the 501c3, and unlike in a normal financing situation where the a lender is assured that it's in first position and its position is prior in time to all mechanics liens or other claims on the property. In this particular case, we wouldn't have that protection because we've deeded the property over with some reversionary right to have the property deeded back to us. And so if I understand what you're saying is, if there's a problem during the construction, all the funds haven't been raised or for whatever reason, when the university gets the property back, it will get the property back subject to those liens on the property, and it has all of its rights under the Nevada revised statutes vis-a-vis the mechanics lien claimants or any other claimants on the property. Is my understanding correct?
Yes, it is, and I would note, we face that circumstance with other real estate projects and concerns. And I can certainly have Mr. Wixom come up, whose expertise in construction and real estate financing, if you'd like further explanation on that.
Well, I think you've answered the question. Will there be any title insurance or any other protections for the university to ensure that it receives back a clear title to the land?
Mr. Wixom, can you mind coming up and perhaps addressing that?
Thank you, Regent Trachark. Michael Wixom for the record. We've included in the provision a couple of references that I think are relevant to your question. The first is there's a prohibition against financing for the construction of the project. So the donor group NHBAC would not be able to use the project or encumber the project with liens as a way to get financing. So that was one certainly important protection that we have in place. The second is there's a prohibition against the imposition of liens against property during the course of construction, so that if there were liens in place, that would be a violation of the agreement. I think you're right in terms of your analysis. If there were, for whatever reason, a situation in which construction stopped, the property would come back to UNLV subject to the mechanics liens, and we would have to address those at that time. With respect to the property itself, we've included a provision so that assuming that the project is completed in a timely fashion, which we would expect, the property reverts to UNLV and UNLV would have title insurance protection at that point in time. We've included certain encumbrances that are allowed, and those, in essence, are the encumbrances that are in place on the property right now. We've also provided a provision that NHBAC would transfer the property back to UNLV with title insurance protection with respect to any other encumbrance that would be against the property. So I think you're right in your analysis. if there's a breakdown in the construction and in the project, we would have to address that at that point in time. As I said, there is a prohibition against mechanics liens, and there's a prohibition against encumbrance. And I hope that helps respond to the question.
You've answered my question. Would it not have been better for the university to have entered into a long-term lease and then file immediately a notice of non-responsibility, in which case the property would have been forever protected against mechanics liens filed against the project during construction?
That was certainly one avenue that we had thought about in terms of negotiating it. The agreement, if entering into a long-term lease, presented a number of issues to the university, one of which was compliance with both Chapter 341 and Chapter 338. We've included provisions in the agreement under which NHBAC has agreed to accept responsibility for paying prevailing wage, but in evaluating the parameters available, that was one avenue. The determination that was made was that this was a better avenue for the university. But I understand what you're saying, and that's certainly a possibility.
And I have one more question for the lawyers, and then I have a last question for the president. Mr. Wixom, why does the donor group require such a long period of time before the property reverts back to the university? 10 years is a long time.
I understand. It's 10 years from now, 5 years from the expiration. The analysis from the and I can't speak for the donor group. I know the explanation that was given as we went through the negotiation was they originally wanted a much longer period of time. The period of time that we settled on was a 5-year period from the completion. I think the importance to the donor group was that they wanted to evaluate the performance of UNLV with respect to replacement reserves, with respect to the care of the building, with respect to the condition of the building, to confirm that the building was going to be kept and maintained in accordance with the agreements that the parties had established, or the agreements that the parties had established at the commencement of the process.
Thank you. President Mina, are there any accreditation concerns due to the timing issues that were raised in this discussion in the event that the construction doesn't start in February of 2021?
None whatsoever. We have already achieved provisional accreditation. The site visit for full accreditation will be this fall. So that accreditation is going to be granted with our current size entering classes and our current facilities.
Are there any concerns on the academic side on what a potential delay, what the potential delay might cause to any of our medical students?
Well, obviously, you know, it's not something we would like to see happen because it would delay the growth of our medical school and our ability to have facilities that are more innovative than we currently have.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a brief statement, and then I'll yield the floor. 7 years ago, the Regents approved a second medical school in Las Vegas based on representations of two former presidents that the state would only be required to fund operations of the school. We were told that once independent from UNR, Southern Nevada donors would contribute the $200 million necessary for the medical education building. Fast forward 7 years, in July of 2019, this board approved the university's request to raise up to $100 million in bond offerings to build the medical education building. Today, the donor group is now asking the Regents to transfer the property on Charleston to an entity formed by them to allow them to raise $150 million to build the medical education building. The university has not been involved in this process. The design and the plans are those of the donor group, and under the terms of the agreements, while university overall design criteria must be satisfied, the university has no direct role in the design process or the construction process. Under the agreement, the oversight of the construction process on behalf of the university is minimal. The donor group has agreed to transfer the completed structure to the university in February 2031. It will own and operate the building during this period. The university's rights during this period will be those of a tenant outlined in the agreement.
No one would object, indeed all would applaud, an outright gift to the university conditioned on its use for construction of the medical education building. But this is not an outright gift. There are many, many strings attached. We can all speculate as to the reasons for the strings.
Trey Shock is right.
I find these conditions attached to the gift or potential gift to be unacceptable. This is a difficult decision. As trustees, we must weigh the interest of our present and future students with our obligations as trustees of the system. Sometimes the price of a gift is too high. For me, in this case, it is too high. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Lieberman and Page. Regent Lieberman.
So this is a historic moment for the medical school. I want to add to Regent Brava's thank yous, not only to the donors, but to Regent Brava, former Regent James Dean Levitt, and Regent Kevin Page, among others, for bringing us to this point, along with our legal team and everyone else involved. This has been a rocky road to start, but throughout, our students have always had an excellent medical education, and I know that will continue throughout the next period of years. My concern is that in 2031, when this contract ends, that this goes back to the UNLV master plan that President Miana outlined and be treated with the same oversight as any other building in the campus structure. I think that's very important. With that in mind, I will support this. Thank you.
Thank you. Regent Page.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. First, I'd like to thank the attorneys, the chancellor, President Miana, Mr. Hardy, and the donors. I know that the contract says it's going to be prevailing wage. Did you guys look at a PLA as well?
They're conferring, Regent Page. Just one moment.
Regent Page, Joe Reynolds for the record. No, not specifically with the PLA. That was discussed, and we believe that a compromise was in the agreement contractually, and I add the donor group at no time had expressed opposition in agreeing to paying prevailing wage with this.
Okay, thank you.
I'm seeing no other questions or comments. Oh, Regent Carvalho.
As somebody who had a large struggle just in the past year trying to find health care for my daughter who had cancer, a future where we have more doctors in Southern Nevada is it has to happen, and this goes in line with that. So I thank everyone involved for coming up with this plan. And moving forward, I'm a Rotarian, and we have something called the four-way test that we use in everything that we think, say, or do. We ask ourselves, is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it build goodwill and better friendships? And will it be beneficial to all concerned? And my hope is that this will build goodwill because all of those other questions are answered from this. So moving forward, I hope that this sparks more philanthropy in Southern Nevada and shows that that the Board of Regents, we are on board with student success and for the future of Southern Nevada. Thank you.
Regent Lieberman.
Going along with what Regent Carvalho has said, I think it's important to acknowledge that I have been spoken to and asked to represent the entire disability community in Southern Nevada in saying on behalf of them and their families that this is going to be a vital step forward. Previously, some medical care for people with disabilities had to be handled out of state, and the fact that this can now be happen here is a major milestone, and we are thankful to many people.
Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I just want to thank everybody involved. I see this as truly a collaborative process, and it took, I know, many, many, many hours, and we don't always get everything we want, but we don't lose everything either. I mean, you came and found a middle ground, and that's what a collaborative negotiated process is all about. So I see this as a huge win-win. It's a win for the students. It's a win for the university. It's certainly a win for our state. Gosh knows, everyone in this room knows we have a critical shortage of doctors, and I really applaud the donors that have carved out a whole new model. I see this as a magnanimous gift that will never be forgotten, and I hope this does set a whole new tone in Nevada for giving. We have a lot of very wealthy people in our state. Our state is very attractive for wealthy people due to our tax structure, and a whole new process and mold is being started with this process, and I'm really happy to vote for it. I see Southern Nevada, it's the economic engine of our state now. 75% of our population's down here. Our medical has not kept up with our population. And I see Nevada as a place to come for medicine. We're going to have everything else in the state, especially here in Clark County, with the sports, the entertainment, the food, the shopping. And then to bring in the medical is just, it's terrific. And I just applaud everybody for all your efforts. When you get something difficult done, it's never easy, but the rewards going forward will be great. So I'm happy to vote for this.
Thank you. We'll have a roll call vote. Chief of Staff Gould.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regent Lieberman.
Yes.
Regent McAdoo.
Yes.
Regent McMichael.
Yes.
Regent Moran. Regent Page.
Yes.
Regent Perkins. Regent Trachuk.
No.
Regent Carter. Regent Carvalho.
Yes.
Regent Del Carlo.
Yes.
Vice Chair Dubrava.
Yes.
Chair Geddes.
Aye. And Mr. Gould, could you just go back to the three on the phone in case they were muted?
Sure. Regent Carter.
Yes.
Thank you. Regent Moran.
Yes.
Regent Perkins. Danny, is she on? She is. For some reason, we aren't hearing her.
Okay.
So I can't hear her. So the motion passes.
Thank you.
Yes. Can you hear me?
We will now go to item number 5, new business. Is there any new business? Seeing none, hearing none, we'll go to item number 6, public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko? Hearing none, is there any public comment in Reno?
No public comment in Reno.
Is there any public comment here in Las Vegas? All right. We are adjourned. There is lunch for those who want to grab a quick bite before they head back to the job. There's probably a PB&J up there for Regent Trachuk. And with that, we are adjourned.